Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, a very special program. We're only going to do two things, health and nutrition, and then continuing with our Conversations with Remarkable Minds series, the demise of spiritual and ethical discourse, and the global demand for a birthing in sacred activism. It'll be a little heady, but we're going to touch the issues that make a difference in our lives. Andrew Harvey is my guest. He is an internationally renowned religious scholar, teacher, author of over 30 books. He is the founder of the Institute for Sacred Activism, an international organization dedicated to inspiring people to become more involved in the challenging of global crisis and commit themselves to peace and sustainability. He studied at Oxford, in fact, was the youngest professor in the history of Oxford. He's also was at the faculty of Oxford, Cornell University, California Institute of Integrative Studies, and other institutions. And he is perhaps best known for having explored all the different religions in depth, including Buddhism, Christianity, Hinduism, Sufism, Islam, and interpreting them in a passionate manner that preserves their meaning and significance for our postmodern times. So he will be the guest. So we're going to go right into our health and nutrition to save more time for him. From Ohio State University, our social ties can impact our memory and slow your brain from aging. I mentioned another study last week. This adds to that, that a strong social network is the key to preserving our memory. And by the way, this is not really new. The discovery bolsters a body of research in humans that supports the role of social connections in helping us improve the quality of our lives. And this is from a professor of behavioral neuroscience and a member of the Center for Chronic Brain Injury at Ohio State. Quote, "Our research suggests that merely having a larger social network can positively influence the aging brain. We know that in humans there's a strong correlation between cognitive health and social connections. But we don't know if it's having a group of friends that's protecting people or if it's that people with declining brain health withdraw from their human connections." The study was designed to crack that question, and it did. So here's the takeaway message, and this ties into something that I have found from my own experiences. When I've done retreats and lectures and workshops and health support groups, all told, if you add in the lectures, then you're dealing with probably a million people, because I've done over 6,000 lectures. But the health support groups alone, we've had about 40,000 people, and then the retreats. And when I speak with people, why did you come? Why are you here? It was not just the gourmet vegan food or some classes. Rather, it was a sense that they're seeking something. Something that they're not finding in the books they're reading or over the internet or the chat rooms or through their therapist or the interdynamic relationship with individuals. But they're seeking the true meaning of their life, which is different than our careers, what we've mastered. And frequently when you speak with someone about what's important in your life, well, my career. And are you successful? Yeah, most people are successful with their careers. Does that give you happiness and a sense of belonging? And there's where you have to be very quiet and listen non-judgmentally. Because people are afraid to revere success at the cost of happiness. And yet that's exactly what we do in our society. Everything to succeed, to prove to someone that we're okay, even if they didn't think we would be okay or in some way didn't believe we would be okay, we're okay. think of all the people who were conditioned to believe that you're nobody unless somebody loves you. Can you imagine what that does to impact a person's sense of well-being? Every day you're having to prove to someone else that you're lovable, desirable, meaningful in their life. You're never going to be at peace. You're never going to be relaxed. You're always going to be on edge, always working harder at proving. And of course, at the end of the day, no matter what you do, there's still the big empty. So when we fulfill this mission, at least get started on the right path by having these deeper questions answered in our life. What is the power of connection? It depends upon what you're connected to, what you're doing, the people in your life, what reason are they there for? That's very important. For 20 years, when I lived over on 86th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam, and I had a wonderful large old apartment, pre-war apartment, and I could hold 12 people at a dining table. And then from the dining table, we would go down to this parquet floor, sunken living room. And every Wednesday night, from about 7 to 11, there would be 12 individuals coming to have dinner. And I'd make the dinner. They weren't chefs. But the purpose of coming was to share what was important in our life, what issues were not being addressed, and then have all these other people give you input. And some of these people were extremely brilliant. I mean, some of the finest minds on the planet would attend. And I sold the apartment and got a brownstone. And that's where I started the Tri-State Healing Center over on 84th and Riverside Drive near Riverside. But during those times, I'd ask people at the end of the evening, how was it? And people who, including very well-known people in their fields, very successful, acknowledged, accomplished, that stop, and one of them in particular, he would grab both of my shoulders and look me in the eye. He says, Gary, he said, I really need this. Even when we laugh and make fun of everything, and he said, I need this connection. Because in the regular world that I'm in every day, I'm supposed to have all the answers. I'm supposed to be there to help everyone, and I do my best. But there's never a moment that I can exhale and just relax and just be myself, because people would know I even have a sense of humor, this man said, because I'm dealing with such serious life and death situations all the time. But each person shares something similarly. They look forward to this, not because of the food, but because of the exchanging of ideas, the openness, knowing that no one there was going to, you know, get up and on social media and say, oh, guess who I just heard saying this, and revealing something that a person had shared in confidence. So being around people you can be yourself, being around people who accept you without trying to demean you, diminish you, to turn you into a better person, which is what a lot of people try to do. That's the nanny state, where other people are brought in to think for you what is right, what is wrong. In all my years of helping people be healthy, I've never, never once have I encouraged a person to change what they were eating to something healthier. I have no right to do that. And I cannot assume that the person would feel comfortable having me in their life if all I did was correct the errors in judgment. Yet that's what the state has become. They control most everything we do and think, and that's why we have so many screwed up people and our educational system has gone awry. So I agree with this study. You need to have connections with people who you can communicate with in some social way. If you just went, you know, dancing, if if you would go out, I tried this about 5 years ago, and it really worked, where we would go once a week to an off-Broadway show, but others wanted to go to a Broadway show, and others wanted to go to art movies. So there were like three different groups of people, anywhere between 10 and 20 people, have dinner, go out, enjoy it, and just enjoy each other's company until the end of the evening when every woman home. People really look forward to this, couples as well. And then I had to go out on the road for 4 months, and that kind of, I hope that they continue, but I'm not sure that they did, because you almost always have to have a dynamic energy, excuse me, that brings people together and motivates them forward. But social ties help you de-age, help keep you younger longer, help improve your memory. All good. Also, on that similar topic, there is a study from Beth Israel Medical Center that shows once again that exercise is linked to improved cognition as you age. And we have the highest number of Americans in our history over the age of 60. And that's according to the National Council on Aging. And there have been thousands of clinical trials suggesting that exercising the body can protect or improve brain health as we age. And few studies provide practical perspective guidance on how much and what kind of exercise. And that's why I constantly suggest starting with power walking. Now there is an exhaustive systematic review of 4,600 clinical trials led by researchers at the Berenson Allen Center for Non-Invasive Brain Stimulation at Beth Israel Medical Center, published in Neurology, the Clinical Practice. And it provides a lot of good insight. Quote, while there's solid evidence to suggest that maintaining a regular exercise regimen can improve brain health, we were most interested in how we could practically apply these scientific findings to the lives of our patients, their family members, and even to ourselves. And then it goes on to talk about aerobic exercise, quote, walking, running, and cycling, weightlifting, and mind-body exercise like yoga and tai chi all contribute to improved cognitive performance. Now people understand how we worked with a 93-year-old advanced Alzheimer's and dementia patient, and even when he did not want to exercise, when he became very moody and withdrawn, his wife of many years, very conscientious woman, very loving to him, very supportive, would insist that he exercise. He'd be a little grumpy, but an hour later, after they'd gone for an hour walk and then went to the gym, he'd be right back up into good spirits. Well, now they've done it with such routineness that his cognition is improving remarkably so. You'll hear him on this program in the upcoming programs. Also, another way that we can live a longer life and healthier, according to McGill University, which is in Quebec, is our microbiome, meaning the bacteria in our gut. Yes, you are what you eat. But science now tells us that we are also the bacteria living in our intestines and what the bacteria eats, and that influences how well we age. And in fact, they found that there was as much as a 60% protection against chronic disease associated with aging in this one study. And this was published in Scientific Reports, and it just adds in another piece of the puzzle to an enormous body of evidence that gut bacteria can have on our health. So let's break it down and make it into its simplest position. The healthier your food, the healthier the gut bacteria become because they're eating and living in that food that you ate. The sicker the food, the meat, the sugar, the refined carbohydrates, the alcohol, the caffeine, then your gut bacteria also become more diseased. So very important. And the National Institutes of Health just released a study that women who are deficient, don't have enough vitamin D, far more likely to have miscarriages. So make sure you're getting that. And from the University of Texas, published in Oncology Letters, phosphatidylcholine can improve the benefit in colorectal cancer. So if you want to be healthier and you're trying to prevent or treat colorectal cancer, quote, the chemo preventative activity of this, you know, this phosphatidylcholine in preclinical and clinical studies is very important. So just something to help. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
You broke my heart because I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake them down. Do you love me?
I'd like to welcome all of you. In 5 minutes, we'll be joined online for a longer conversation with Remarkable Mind by Professor Andrew Harvey. And the theme, and you really ought to send out a little message to all your friends, because this is one of those rare conversations they're not going to hear anywhere else. And I'm pretty sure the depth that we're going to take this conversation will suddenly cause some lights to illuminate in people's consciousness. We're going to talk about the demise of spiritual and ethical discourse and the global demand for birthing in sacred activism. Finding the sacred in us is one of the reasons people come to the retreats, and that's why so many people have left the retreat so empowered. Something quick for you. First, I'm going to be doing a 3-hour webinar live this Sunday evening, and I'll be taking your questions. I'm going to be giving protocols for diabetes, for weight control, and for heart disease, and sharing a lot of information with you. So go to prn.fm, and you can see where you can get information and sign up. Secondly, I'm going to offer something today, which is an elixir. Of all the products I've ever invented, and I have a new one coming in about 2 months, it's going to be very exciting. The one that I take with me, I make sure, in fact, sometimes I can't get it through an airport, so I'll ship it ahead to the destination. And when I'm out driving, I'll take a case with me, because I'm going to use it all day, every day. And that's the anti-aging elixir. You talk about having everything that you need in this drink, loaded with dozens of organic superfoods. It's for anyone looking to supercharge your health. It's a liquid, and you got to shake it and keep it refrigerated and shake it, because I didn't put any emulsifiers. I didn't put anything in there that would keep it separate, so you have all these different consistencies kind of coexisting. It's not sweet and it's not bitter. It's just right at the border between both. Here's what's in it. Organic apple juice, organic mangosteen, a superstar, organic char cherry, a superstar, organic pomegranate, organic superstar, organic acai, organic nopal, bet you haven't had that, organic noni, organic turmeric pulp, bet you haven't that, organic ginger juice, organic sea buckthorn, ascorbic acid, organic mango, organic papaya, pectin, organic guar, organic lychee, that's very important, organic beetroot powder, organic aloe vera, also goji, which is wolfberry, elderberry, cranberry, blueberry, kakadu. Ever heard of kakadu? K-A-K-A-U-D-U. It's a plum. Really a superstar. Bet you never heard it. Bet you never tried it. Now you can. Moringa, organic moringa, organic baobab, B-A-O, B-A-B, comes from one of the largest, most beautiful old trees in the world out of Africa. No one else uses it. I do. I know what's in it. And organic maquai, M-A-Q-U-I, organic stevia, and graviola. Whoa. There is just nothing in the world that I'm aware of you could put in your body that's going to do more for your body than this. What I will not do is tell you what I know it will do. I don't ever make a claim. But listen to the title, Gary Nall's Anti-Aging Elixir. It took a long time to get this because I couldn't find people who could manufacture it. It takes a very special manufacturer to be able to source the best organic ingredients. You heard everything was organic, and it's vegan, and it's gluten-free, and it's kosher. It's all these wonderful things. And I make it in very small batches, only about 800 bottles at a time. We have 200 bottles left. So give a call. I'm going to give you an order number. It's on sale today. 877-627-5065. Again, write it down. Call it. 877-627-5065. And this is the freshest it could possibly be. And again, shake it up before you use it. There's a cap on top. Fill the cap up and drink it down. All right? It's not bitter and it's not sweet. It's just almost a little neutral. But it depends upon the time of year because where I get organic tart cherries at one point might not be the same place, and sometimes there's difference. And but you talk about really doing great in your cells. This is it. So it's on sale. We just got a new batch in yesterday because we've been out of it. And sometimes why am I out of something like this? Because they can't get all the ingredients organic at the same time. Sometimes I have to wait 3, 4, 5 months. And I'm willing to do that rather than compromise on the quality of the product. So we got it right now, just fresh in. 877-627-5065. We're going to take a break and come back with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, continuing with our Conversations with Remarkable Minds series, The Demise of Spiritual and Ethical Discourse, and the Global Demand for Birthing and Sacred Activism. And as Dr. Andrew Harvey is my guest, and I've given you his background. He is the founder of the Institute of Sacred Activism, and he's dedicated his life to inspiring people to become more involved in challenging our global crisis and commit themselves to peace, sustainability, and also an ethic and manner to consider what would it be like if you were in the other person's shoes. And I say that because right now I'm seeing enormous contradictions and hypocrisy in everything in our public discourse. But I'm going to invite Dr. Harvey on so that he can listen into what we're about to do. Nice to have you with us today, Andrew.
Always a great joy to be with you, Gary. Thank you.
And thank you for coming on a little earlier than what we had planned, because I want you to hear a clip from last night from Tucker Carlson, and he has a guest. It's a two-part. It's short. And why I want you to hear it is because Tucker points out something. Now, on some issues, I agree with Tucker. On others, I do not. But I'm a person that is progressive and spiritual, so I look for the truth wherever it is. And I don't look at the label or how something is monikered.
Oh, I hear you. It's extremely important to be as wide as possible. Yes.
And what they're saying, and I want you to relate that to our larger theme of, can't we have a conversation based upon listening to what the other person says non-judgmentally, and instead of trying to demean them and deny them of what they believe, try to come to some awareness. How would I deal with an issue if I were in that person's shoes? And how can I communicate with a person to show that there are other ways of looking at this problem, maybe to help stimulate them to appreciate that they've been holding on to the wrong views for too long? All right, now it's not to agree or disagree with anything that was said. It's merely that we've come to a place, Andrew, in our society where identity politics is dominating the curriculum in colleges, that we do not look at other people as sacred human beings. We objectify them based now upon what is your body politic? What is your economic status? Have you suffered? Are you a victim? Are you a perpetual victim? Are you successful? We have so many ways of slicing and dicing a person that we forget that I'm just dealing with another human being. Why can't I start with the idea in any discourse, instead of calling someone names, instead of in any way demeaning them, to support my own political or ideological frame of reference, why can't I just start by saying, if we were both stripped naked and knew nothing about each other, and we're standing in front of each other, how then could I judge that person if I don't see their home or where they graduated from college or where they teach or what office they go to each day or who their partner is? Why can't we start our dialogue by looking at the other human being as being a person who is spiritual?
I love what you're saying, and it really brings up in my heart a wonderful conversation I had with an old Iranian sheikh about friendship, that friendship, the seeing of God in every being, the true cherishing of every being as an emanation of God, this kind of friendship beyond religion is really the source of the renewal of the world. This is what we need to be aiming for in the depths of our lives. It's a huge spiritual achievement.
Andrew, when I witness today a complete lack of universal ethics in our public conversations, I'm concerned. There are hordes of chatter espousing the self-serving individual ethics for the wealthy, the corporations, for politicians, for cultural cults, to convince us of the correctness of their actions. But to my own personal view, none of these are grounded in love. The entire ethos of our culture is the pursuit to succeed and seek self-identity and gratification. And spiritual discussion is completely absent. Instead, there is a mania to identify the deep humanitarian crisis we face with self-absorbed identities that uplift the needs of the false ego. And consequently, nothing changes.
Nothing real gets done because everything becomes a theater of this unreal ego. It's really alarming, and it's a form of pathology. And I think it's preventing clear, wise, radical transformation of the structures of our culture, because it's preventing people coming together in a far more universal understanding of who human beings and all sentient beings are, and what the world is. And this is tragic at this moment. And of course, this kind of identity politics absolutely ravages the left and makes the right laugh with joy, because it plays into all of the pathologies of the so-called disinherited Trumpians. So it's a madness. It's got to stop. We've got to concentrate on banding together in the heart to react together to an overwhelming crisis that is now threatening the survival of the human race. It's a crisis on every level that is exploding. And the sign of its ultimate dereliction is that public discourse has now become a sewer of lies, of appalling, ghastly lies. And these appalling, ghastly lies are strategies of massive distraction to enable a group of thugs to dominate the planet. This is very serious.
Could you speak about our obsession with technology and our blind faith in the the ingenuity of science to cure all of our problems and the adverse effects on our psyches and spirit by being oversaturated with information and data and the media full of faux and crass images? And how do all these further isolate us from our true nature? And what kind of relationship should we have to our world and these obsessions which are alienating us?
Well, that's a huge and wonderful question. I would say that the fundamental source of our dereliction at this moment is the completely crazed belief that technology can get us out of a crisis that we created through our addiction to domination, our insane hubris, our refusal to listen to any of the warning signs that have crowded us now for 5 decades about the environment, about our economic system. So it's absolutely essential, I believe, to get real that we are in a free-falling crisis and to realize that the only possible response is a response born from the deepest universal humanity, rooted in the divine, that rises as a wave of love in action, concerted action between all races to stop the slaughter of the animals, to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons, to stop the insane destruction of the earth, and to create a humanity that works together in humility and mutual respect before we are annihilated.
I would agree, Dad, definitely. About a month ago...
Does that make sense to you, Gary?
Yes, it makes complete sense. And I think it makes sense to a person as long as they do not have a preconditioned epigenetic reference that limits by their filtering what you just said.
Exactly, because, and that's the huge problem, because what we're talking about is what the very greatest mystics of all traditions discover. One presence, one divine, one reality, all things, emanations of that one reality, and all human beings linked inextricably by being made of the substance of that one reality, and all human beings being linked to everything that lives through that insanity of oneness that is the truth. That is the fullest, most powerful universal expression, but to get to it, you have to crawl over all the conventions and prejudices of all the religions and systems. But there are people now seeing this necessity and willing to do that and being very freed by what they discover. A universal humanity that has enormous potential if it can overcome the crazy tribalisms of every conceivable kind that have been its history.
I'm going to loop back to something you just mentioned in a moment, but I was curious because about a month ago, I had a Native American attorney and activist on the program, and she spoke about her tribe's understanding of the dire crisis humanity faces, where everything is now at stake. And she said that it is not the case that there is some kind of new spiritual dispensation or divine light or anything new agey emerging at this time. Rather, those forces most invested in destroying our environment and our world have never been more bold than today. They no longer need to act in the shadows because they can fully act in the open with complete impunity, and
exactly.
It's all visible now. The deep state, no longer a creature hiding in the shadows, is in full view and
yes.
Supported, ironically today, supported by the liberal community. It's rather ironic because I'm carried on Pacifica stations for 42 years. The only place my entire broadcasting career I was ever censored and my freedom of speech was usurped 3 separate times on just one station. And yet these are the people
wow.
who want to let you believe that there's freedom of speech. There is, as long as it's the sanitized,
the line,
politically
yes,
correct.
Absolutely.
You know,
yes.
But if you challenge it, they don't want to hear from you. Same way in colleges.
Oh, my God, no. Yes.
And now we're exposing the deep state in a series of articles Richard and I are writing, including on Wikipedia. Wikipedia, people are not aware that the people editing Wikipedia have demonized one of the greatest minds on the planet, Rupert Sheldrake. And
oh,
also,
God, Rupert is an insanely brilliant man, one of the great heroes of modern science and modern thinking and feeling. Amazing person.
You wouldn't know that if you read his thing on Wikipedia. So we're challenging Wikipedia. And so all of this is in full view, with no apologies from the people being exposed.
Great.
The fossil fuel companies, the drug companies, the agrochemical companies like Monsanto, Wall Street, the Silicon Valley techies, fundamentalist religious sects, both Zionist and evangelical, white supremacists and nationalists, the military and industry, and Trump and the lecherous, bought-off politicians from both sides of the aisle can publicly say and do as they wish, and no one will hold them to account. In other words, it is not that there is no light coming into the world. Rather, the darkness is coming into the light. But we need to see it for what it is. And that means waking up. And this is where
that
I feel your work
up,
is.
Thank you. I mean, it means waking up fast to the enormous power of this very real evil that we've colluded with for far too long. And this is a shattering process, because it means realizing that all of our fantasies about progress and all of our fantasies about being in the right and having an orderly vision of the future were just that, fantasies. We're in a potentially terminal situation with a group of psychopathological thugs who happen to be the people who run the world, creating a fascist nightmare out of the world. This is where we are potentially headed towards at headlong abandon.
Okay, take that one step further, because because what I see and what you are intimating is that our civilization increasingly has succeeded in creating what we'll call a cultural matrix to keep us all asleep. You use the term hysterically busy or universally ADHD. So what do people need to do in order to open their eyes from their slumber and see our current cultural reality for what it truly is?
Well, I believe that it's very difficult to face things as they really are in their full horror if you haven't already made a very deep attempt to get into connection with your profound self, the self that is behind all of the different games and traumas and karmas of your ego. So I believe it's a two-part strategy. I believe that if you truly are willing now to face where we are, what you need to do is to have a very simple form of spiritual practice that can connect you directly with the you that lives in you beyond space and time. And that practice is saying the name of the divine by whatever way you love the divine. It doesn't matter what religion you belong to. What matters is that you say a name that is soaked with all the deepest loves of your heart. And saying that name clears the mirror of your heart, so that increasingly and very mysteriously you come to sense this profound, brimming, dynamic peace at the core of your being. This is the God in you. From that place, you can turn to look without illusion into the boiling mad illusion of this horrific crisis. By illusion, I don't mean that it isn't real, but I mean that it's governed by tragic illusions that are now rending themselves apart. And you can increasingly see that the dark has taken over all the institutions of the planet, all the different discourses of the planet, and that there is an enormous danger now of us waltzing into an orgy of nihilistic terminal greed, fueled by insane magical thinking that will result in the extermination of the race and taking a great deal of nature with it. This is what you see. This is something you can't avoid seeing. What you know, if you're doing the practice, is that something very strong and beautiful and holy lives in you as a permanent gift. So instead of going crazy at what you see, instead of indulging in denial of what you see, you make a decision at the core of your life. What am I going to give my life to now? And the only possible answer, I believe, that makes any sense to me is to say, I'm going to gamble my life on an increasing true commitment to being someone who loves deeply and puts that love into action in heart, mind, words, and actions in an attempt to inspire people to rise up against this madness.
I appreciate that's a very important insight you just gave us. You're a religious scholar who has also immersed himself experimentally in each major world religion. I recently came across a quote by a famous Sufi mystic who wrote, "The enlightened are not bound by a religion."
Right.
And we are now seeing the gross failures and negligence of the world's religions, although not all factions within them, and I have an authentic voice that truly represents their they have to do something that is more spiritual, based upon universal truths and not just dogmas and rituals. And I'm, you know, you can look at the secular mystics, secular shamans, secular Buddhists, Muslims, secular Christians and Jews, and secular Hindus. And what would that require from these faith believers? What might a secular mystic be like today? And also draw the connection between living our deeper spirituality as parallel to being an activist and a revolutionary for preserving sanity.
Thank you. What a wonderful question. I think the most overwhelming reality is that God is mother and has cooked the food in different ways to suit different palates. And really getting that should be the first requirement for being born on the planet, that you may have one road to truth given to you by your race, your color, your country, but that's only a road. All other roads are sacred. All other roads have amazing things to teach you. All other roads are God-ordained, potentially, and your duty is to take whatever road you choose with great sincerity, honoring all the others as given by the mother side of God. I think that is fundamentally the truth, and that would be the center and cornerstone of a world civilization. I think anybody who was reared in that would understand something that hardly anybody understands at this moment, and that is that being born a human being is an unbelievable blessing, and that being born a human being is being born as an original blessing with divine consciousness. And being born as a human being is being born into an embodied divine world with this divine consciousness, with amazing potential for creativity, for rapture, for deep sacred relationships with other beings of all kinds. And that this is the new human. This is the new way. This is the reality that's been trying to be born through all of the different terrible mistakes of our history. And it's here. And those of us who feel it and know it need to choose it humbly in ourselves and live it as an inspiration. Go for broke now, because time is running out. We don't have time to get this right. We need to plunge in raggedly and go for broke, and do so with great sincerity and passion to model the joy and the purpose that comes when you realize, oh my God, I am blessed. I'm in a beloved, beloved relationship with the divine. I am like any other human being. I have the power within me to face it all and to live a dignified life of service. I am not bereft. That is the beginning of the birth of a new race.
I would agree with that. By the way, how should people confront pessimism, cynicism, and despair? And how does pessimism and despair suffocate our motivations and intentions to embrace what you call sacred activism? And explain to us, in the context of psycho-spiritual principles, what sacred activism is.
Well, Gary, thank you. This is such an important question for everybody now. I think the first thing that we do with our despair and is not to judge ourselves for it. There are many reasons to despair. This is a terrible situation, and to be gentle and compassionate with yourself as you despair, and to really cherish your soul and soothe your heart with adoration and practice and really attend to your body. That is to locate inside you a mother that can attend to the you that's going through this appalling situation. So that's the first thing that's important. The second thing that's really important, and this is what I deeply and increasingly believe, is that it's extremely important to train at the core of your life to live aligned with the great joy, the joy that is the fundamental revelation of the divine to all the mystics, the joy that is playing in everything, appearing in everything, that has created everything, the joy beyond reason, the great bliss that lives at the core of the Godhead. That is what is known by all those who awaken. This training in joy enables you to see that pessimism and despair and cynicism are illusory in their final natures, because they can never describe the potential that each human has by being divine, by having divine consciousness, that acts as a disruptive golden alchemical agent, even in impossible situations. So this unmasking of the logic and the power and the intelligence of pessimism and despair starts to happen as you live more and more in the core of your joy, in the core of the tender rapture that's in your heart when you know who you are doing as much as you possibly can to be of true help to others. From this place that is born in you through this humble, simple opening to the essence of who you are, you become a conscious co-creator with the divine of the new reality that is trying to be born in the world, very humbly, very simply. And you start acting and reacting in ways that bring peace and inspiration to others. At this moment, you start, in fact, becoming a new kind of human being, a sacred activist, somebody who knows from their own inmost experience that there's a force that's born in a person when he or she combines the two most noblest passions of the soul, the passion of the soul for union with God and the passion of the soul for justice, for the establishment of justice and equality and harmony and balance in the core of life. When you bring these two great passions together, something primordially powerful is born in you, a power of love that is both contemplative and active, a power of love that is saturated with inner peace, but also very passionate about acting from the deepest sacred knowledge to help and sustain and serve others at the most compassionate level imaginable. This
I have
force
one,
of sacred... I could go on forever, but I hope that's answered you.
You more than satisfied that question. My final question is this, and it is a trickster question. Right now, one of the greatest debates on the planet and one of the most contentious arguments that people are having, especially those who either believe completely in the religion that they have been a part of, or those who are in contempt of religion for different ideological or political or personal beliefs, they keep asking, is Islam a religion of peace and love? Is Christianity? Is Judaism? Is Buddhism? Because we're not asking the right questions, nor are we looking honestly for what our answers might portend. And if it were me, I would simply be honest about what the real meaning of each religion is and what you can find in their sacred texts and their teachings that can allow you to either take the lower road or the higher road, and we're not willing to parse that. Many people are against Islam, not because of the vast majority of Islamic people and what they believe in, but because that segment that is interpreting a part of its sacred teachings to justify its contempt against life and other
right.
people. So could you show us what argument and discussion we should have to bring the sacred back into our discussions of religion, and so that we do not continue to have arguments nonstop?
Well, I think the first thing that has to be at the center of any new real adventure is the statement that there is only one presence here, and all paths lead to that presence, and all paths are sacred, and all paths must honor each other, and stop claiming any kind of exclusive road to God. That is the absolute cornerstone of any real possible humanity. The second thing that everyone would need to know is that all of the paths that have been created need to be radically adjusted because of the severity of the crisis. And that what the severity of the crisis reveals is that nearly all of the paths, including all of the paths of the major religions, have veered far away from honoring the depths of the embodied Godhead, of the Mother, of the sacredness of nature, and of the sacredness of the creation. And that what's essential now is to understand that if we don't all become very much more awake to the life as sacred, whatever our religion, all of the work that we've done over the hundreds of thousands and millions of years of our evolution will be completely wasted, because we will create a situation in which we will destroy ourselves. So those are the real foundations of authentic change in our spiritual world. And they're very challenging, both of them, but they could still be done if there were people willing to really show the path.
Well said. I appreciate very much you coming on and sharing your points of view. There's a great deal of anger in the world today. There's a lot of identity politics where people are being accused based upon the religion they belong to, even if that's not what they personally believe. You can see violence in religious texts. It doesn't mean that everyone in a religion will choose that. And wouldn't it be nice today if there were a group of religious scholars who got together and said, if the whole object of the exercise is to live at a higher moral level with a greater appreciation of how to coexist in a harmonious way with other people, let's just leave out all the negatives and all that that supports anger or destruction, and include everything that is supportive of forgiveness and cooperation and conciliation. Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, that would be stunning, but of course the great roadblock is that, you know, the monotheistic religions believe that every single word in their holy book is God's word, which is a form of pathology which is going to be very hard to cure.
It's not going to be cured in the near future, but at least you've given us a roadmap. And in, by the way, Andrew
well, it can't
Harvey's...
can't be cured, you know, except through spiritual revelation. I think that everybody should understand that we can't cure this pathology in our current state of consciousness. People shouldn't be thinking about what religion they belong to. They should be deeply longing to wake up to the light, wake up to divine identity beyond religion. That's the goal at this moment. Anything other than that is just playing into the old circus, which is clearly on fire.
Well, we have a society and a world on fire right now. Conflict everywhere. At one level, I'm extremely optimistic for those who are coming into spiritual activism and their own sense of connecting and vibrating at the highest frequency, honoring the eternal truths that we all have embedded in us at this spark of life. For those people, they will make the choices that allow them to honor all the good things in life. For everyone else, with the global warming crisis, with the economic meltdowns and inequality, with massive diseases, with corruption at every level, with the what happens when you hit the raw nerve of a society because people are out of work. No, there's going to be a lot of chaos in the upcoming future. But if people read and acted upon The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism, your new book, that would make a difference. And by the way, Andrew Harvey will be leading an intimate, intensive seminar and retreat on sacred activism next month from June 11th to June 15th at the Abode Retreat Center in the Hudson Valley. It's limited space, so for more information, go to the Abode, abode.org, or call 518-794-8090, extension 125, 518-794-8090, extension 125. We look forward to our next conversation, Andrew.
Oh, me too, Gary. I love you, and thank you for your wonderful work. And God bless everybody, and please come to this retreat. It's going to be a truly grounding of our whole being in peace and joy and purpose and strength. This is what we need now. God bless you.
All the best. We're out of time, everyone, and we've taken a few minutes away from Eutrice Lead, who is right here following us every day with always an interesting and stimulating conversation. Have a nice day, everyone.